Let's take a journey back to 2003. Canadian teen sensation Avril Lavigne was topping the charts and turning the music industry upside down. But what if I told you that the Avril Lavigne we know and love might not be the same Avril? What? Did Avril die? Was she replaced by a doppelganger? I'm Joanne McNally, and I'm doing a deep dive into a notorious internet conspiracy. Who replaced Avril Lavigne? Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, I'm Tom Power. Welcome to Q. So, what do you do when you have a bad day at work? Do you buy yourself a little treat on the way home? Do you vent about it with your husband or your wife? Do you watch three episodes of the 90s sitcom Blossom while eating a whole bag of sour cream and onion rings? That's very specific. Don't worry about it. If you're Carly Fortune and you have a bad day at work, you start writing. Carly is now the Canadian romance writer whose first book, Every Summer After, became a New York Times bestseller. But as she'll tell you, she only started writing that book after getting off a really tough and demoralizing work call and then doing some quick mental math that she'll tell you about. Not only does that first book sell a ton of copies, her next book, Meet Me at the Lake, is currently being adapted by Prince Harry and Meghan Markle for Netflix. And now she's back with a new book called This Summer Will Be Different. It's set by the ocean on Prince Edward Island. Here's the thing. I knew Carly's work in sort of the inside Canadian media circles because she was the executive editor of this website, Refinery29 Canada. So we started by talking about how she pivoted careers and how it's never too late for you to try something new. Here's our conversation. How are you?
I'm great. So good to be here.
It's quite a book for me to be reading in my office by myself in the middle of the day, I'll tell you that much. It gave me a start. They didn't tell me anything about it.
So you just dove into it. It was kind of steamy from the get-go.
They were like, oh, it's a Canadian author. She's had a couple of books. And I was like, oh, yeah, I knew you as from your old gig.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, cool. Well, I didn't know. I knew. I had a feeling. I heard something about her becoming a novelist. And then, yeah, like page eight. Page eight.
Are you a blusher? Did you blush?
I blushed. I blushed.
Great.
I think I did. I furrowed an eyebrow and I shut the door. Congratulations on it, by the way.
Thank you.
I want to talk a little bit about the story and how we got there. So, like I said, I knew you in our little world.
In our journalism bubble.
Good for you for getting out.
Thank you. I always wanted an exit strategy.
I didn't know. Now I know mine.
Yes.
Romance novelist.
Yeah.
Executive editor of Refinery 29.
Yeah.
The story I heard, I hope you might tell it.
I'd love to.
Bad phone call, yeah. Frustrating day at work, mm-hmm. and something changes. What's the story there?
Yeah, so I had been running Refinery 29 Canada. I hired the team. I launched that brand here. I'm so proud of the work that we did. But as I rose up in my career as a journalist and as an editor, you get closer to how the sausage is made. And also you start managing people and I got further away from the work that I really, really loved, which was coming up with ideas and collaborating. And I was fighting with the company all the time. We were owned by Vice Media Group. And I got off one particularly horrible phone call. It was the most frustrating phone call of my work career.
Kind of a demoralizing kind of thing?
It was, to my mind, ethically very problematic.
Okay.
And I was just so sick of working my butt off. I was a journalist for 16 years and feeling like no matter what I did, it couldn't make a difference. I think because it's also very competitive to get into that people can be treated quite poorly. And I got off that phone call and I was at the cottage, so I was using a landline. So I literally slammed down the phone and said to myself, I need to do something for myself. I have done all my creative work as an adult for my employer. I want to take that back because it's 2020, it's the pandemic, and I need to do something for myself. And I'm going to write a book because I had always wanted to write a book.
Why hadn't you?
It was one of those bucket list things where you're like, oh, you know what I'd like to do is write a book, but I'm never going to do that.
Aspiring author growing up or anything?
When I was a kid, that's what I loved doing, writing stories, telling stories on the school bus. But I thought it would be impossible to become an author.
Because it's so hard or because it's so risky? Or
I don't think I had. You know, I grew up in a really small town, 1,200 people. The idea of me, Carly Fortune from Barry's Bay, making it into the world as a professional author. That just seemed like an impossible dream. Yeah. Like, I didn't know anyone who worked in publishing, and I just didn't think that was possible. And I was very concerned about money. And I think what I absorbed growing up was that writers didn't make any money. And so, smart kid that I was, I went into journalism.
It's like Scrooge McDuck, pools of doubloons in journalism. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah,
I loved magazines. So I could see, like, oh, you know, there's kind of some clear jobs in magazines.
So after this frustrating phone call,
yeah.
The story I hear is that you start waking up early. Like, do you set an alarm that night for 4 a.m. to get up and...
Almost. I calculated how many words would be in a romance novel manuscript, and it was 80,000 words. And then I figured out how many days were left in the year and divided 80,000 by the number of days.
It's like what, 300 something?
388.
Okay.
Good job.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much. So, no, that wasn't me doing the mental math. That was me reading it in a background packet beforehand and trying to remember what the
so
number was.
I'm so happy you owned up to that.
No, yeah, that was not me doing mental math. I should have let you believe I was more impressive than I was, probably, to be fair. Sorry, so
I figured
that's
out,
amazing, by the way, that you did that. That's how you have decided to approach it.
Yeah, I broke down the goal, and it was if I wrote 388 words a day, I could finish by the end of the year. And so I did that. I woke up at 5 a.m. every day before my husband. At the time, I had one son. I have two boys now. Before they woke up, and I wrote before work. And then sometimes I'd write after my son went to bed. Sometimes I'd write on the weekend. And I finished it in 4 months.
Wow. How did you feel when you were writing?
Like I discovered what I was meant to be doing.
Oh, Carly.
Honestly, it was a profound relief because I thought journalism was it. And then once I got a job where I thought, this is my dream job. This is what I'm meant to be doing. And it wasn't. I was really unhappy. And so discovering that I loved writing fiction so much was just a relief. And it was such a joy. And it really, writing that book really helped me get through 2020.
Why romance?
Well, I had started reading romance about a year and a half earlier as a way to escape work stress. In 2020, all I could stomach was a happy ending, honestly.
Yeah.
And I love romances that are an emotional roller coaster that like delve into mental health or our relationships with our jobs or our families. But at the end, I like knowing that you can walk away feeling a little bit better about people. And that is really what I needed in 2020.
So every summer after, you write that kind of for yourself.
Totally.
And I guess you have some contacts in the publishing industry because of your gig. So, you know, like how did that happen?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll give you my tips.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. There's a subtle implication going on through this whole conversation. Everyone out there is getting very nervous. Like, don't give them any ideas.
Well, I kind of kept the project a secret. I was a bit embarrassed mm-hmm. about it. I was afraid if I told somebody, they'd be like, who do you think you are mm-hmm. to write fiction?
Oh, yeah.
But I did mention it to a friend of mine, the journalist Robin Doolittle. She had published, I forget at that time if it had been one or two nonfiction books.
She wrote that Rob Ford book at the beginning.
She did. Yeah. And she kindly put me in touch with an agent who offered to read the book. And I knew enough then that was a very difficult thing to get an agent to even open your email is really hard. And once I finished the book, I sent it to her and I posted on social media that I had set this goal for myself and I had achieved it. And after I did that, another agent reached out to me and asked to read it. And then a friend of mine was like, Carly, this seems like a real thing. You need to start taking yourself seriously. You need to talk to other authors about how you actually sell a book, not just, you know, send it to two people and wash your hands of it. Because I really didn't think of it as, like, I didn't really believe that it would be published. And I ended up finding my dream agent, who is Taylor Haggerty, who is also Emily Henry's agent. And the rest kind of went from there.
Well, the rest kind of went from there is light. That's a light way of putting it, what actually ends up happening.
Huh.
New York Times bestseller, a book you just wrote for yourself, gets embraced in this crazy way by others. And I asked our producer, Vanessa, out there. So Vanessa's in her late 20s, and oftentimes I need her to, like, translate
stuff for the Gen Zs for me. So I don't think she's a Gen Z. I think she's a millennial. But like, she has to translate things for me.
Yes.
And I said, so how did these books blow up? And she said, oh, they got really big on TikTok. What does that mean when a book blows up on TikTok? What does that, what do you notice?
Somebody takes a match, lights the book.
Oh, it was one of the bad versions of that. Yeah, there was a book burning of your book somewhere.
What I noticed was, so like on other, like on Instagram, there are hashtags. And so there was an Every Summer hashtag. It's all user generated. It's not coming from me. And I did notice that the views on the Every Summer After hashtag kept going up and up and up and up and up over the summer.
And I guess book sales are going up then too.
Books are, yeah, everything, week over week, things start picking up in a, the conversation shifts around the book very rapidly after it comes out from, you know, hey, have you read this book, to yes, this is the next on my list, to I love this book, you have to read it, to this is the book of the summer, to is this book worth the hype? And at that point, at the hype point, I was like, this is something, it's happening here. And I remember in the summer, when this is all happening, the Every Summer After hashtag had something like 11 million views on TikTok. And then I saw a video that was put, just slammed, the book gets slammed down. And it was like, worst romance book ever. And it had 64,000 likes.
Oh my God.
And I was like, just so surreal. Like, when the is this book worth the hype stuff happened, my dad read Every Summer After. It was the first book he'd read since the 70s. And he messaged me and he said, it's not bad for a book. And so...
You should have put that on the dust jacket, by the way.
I put it a quote card. I made this little quote card for Instagram that said, it's not bad for a book,
so
Carly's dad. Yeah. Because I was trying to very naively wrestle back the conversation. Like, please lower your expectations around this book. It's just a book. Mm-hmm. But of course, I didn't quite understand then how you truly do hand a book over to readers and to the world, and after that, it's not yours anymore.
I'm Tom Power. You're listening to Q. More of my conversation with the author Carly Fortune after this.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now, what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
If you're just tuning in, I'm Tom Power. You're listening to Q. You're halfway through my conversation with the Canadian novelist Carly Fortune, who has had a whirlwind few years. She cranked out 3 books since 2021. As you just heard Carly talk about, writing her first book was a bit of a piece of cake, but her second book, Meet Me at the Lake, didn't come as easily. That's where our conversation picks up.
Yeah, so I have 2 children, as I mentioned, and after my first son was born, I experienced postpartum OCD, which is something we don't hear a lot about, partially because I think it's very difficult to talk about, and a lot of people who experience it don't tell anyone ever.
They feel so much shame around it, or they feel terrified of it.
It is very scary, yeah. Extremely scary, and the intrusive thoughts are very disturbing. And I felt that I was going to be institutionalized if I told anybody.
Right, because they're harmful thoughts, right?
They are. Yeah. And people experience them differently, but for me, they were harmful thoughts. And so that was with my first child. And with my second, and I was writing Meet Me at the Lake just after my second was born, I did have a few intrusive thoughts, but I was much more better equipped to identify them as what they were and just kind of not worry about them too much, to kind of send them on their way. But the anxiety, and postpartum OCD is an anxiety disorder, my like general anxiety was almost debilitating. It was very hard to get out of bed. I was worried about everything. And then I was writing Meet Me at the Lake, and it, you know, my mental health was terrible. I was writing that book. And there, not to give any spoilers, but this experience certainly comes in to the book.
And that was intentional on your part to say, hey, you know, this is something I'm going through. I want to write about it.
I actually didn't think about including it until after I was done the first draft. And I went for a coffee with a good friend of mine. And she was telling me about some mental health struggles she'd been experiencing. I had no idea. And I told her what I went through. And she had no idea either. And we have known each other for a long time. And she said to me, you know, I wonder if this will come into one of your books one day. And I said, no, absolutely not. And then I was thinking about the journeys of one of my characters in the book. And I thought, you know what? I could weave this into the story. It would make a lot of sense for what this character is going through. And so I changed. I added that to the story later on, but it wasn't my intention initially. And I had purposefully never written about it as a journalist because I had a difficult time as an editor getting people to engage with mental health content. People don't want to click on mental health headlines.
Yeah, people want to write it, but people don't necessarily want to click on it. People don't want to, yeah.
And fair enough. It's tough stuff to engage in. But within a romance, you are given this place where you can tackle some of these subjects and readers feel safe because they know at the end things are going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. That's the one that Prince Harry and Meghan Markle reach out to you for?
Yeah, that's the one.
What does that look like? Is there a pigeon comes at the door? Is there an owl?
A carriage?
Is there a carriage that comes and picks you up? And
yeah.
Does someone say doth when they bring it to you?
That's exactly how it works.
does someone say hear ye, hear ye? Do you have to have one of those gigantic letters at the top of your book that was never, you know, the gigantic S, you know? And then can you tell me a little bit about how that happened?
Sure, yeah. So
am I right about any of my guesses?
Yeah, okay. The hear you yeah. was in fact accurate. So I had known that Archwell, which is Harry and Meghan's production company, I knew that Tracy Ryerson, who heads up scripted content there, was reading the book, had liked the book, and that Meghan was going to read it. And at that point, I was kind of like, yeah, sure. You know, like that's so cool. But yeah. I try not to put too much hope or emphasis on what happens on the film and TV side of things because it's not why I'm writing the books. That it was like, nope, Meghan likes it. They want to meet with you. And Archwell's deal is in conjunction with Netflix. So I also had a meeting with the Netflix team.
Wow.
And these early meetings, you meet with everyone who's kind of interested. And it's just for like a vibe read. Like, do I like you? Do you like me? And a creative conversation. It's not a business conversation.
Is it a Zoom? Are you looking? You're looking at Prince Harry and Meghan Markle on Zoom? That's kind of cool.
I Zoomed with Meghan and Tracy. It was amazing phone call or amazing Zoom call. I just felt like they really got what I was trying to do with the book. And I felt like it was going to be in really good hands.
I was talking to Emily Henry the other day, as I mentioned to you, and we talked a little bit. I wanted to get your thoughts on this.
Yeah.
That there seems to be a change in attitudes towards romance novels.
Yeah.
We were talking about how once it was something that you'd hide underneath your couch cushions or it was something that was seen as sort of a lower form of fiction.
Yeah.
And we talked a little bit about how she's seen that change over the years. I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, I certainly agree. I think, you know, we have this generation of readers who is so unapologetic about what they love. You know, when we're talking about books exploding on TikTok, it's with readers who are generally younger than me, and they are not ashamed to say that they love romance. And so that is very different from, for example, when my experience with romance is my grandmother reading romance. And she would say that she didn't read the saucy bits and that she was reading them just for the story. And
that's what people used to say about Playboy magazine,
exactly.
That they were just reading the articles.
And we all agreed that she was lying. Like it was just a general agreement that. So that's a profound shift. I do think that because there are so many people coming to romance, there is also a shift in, you know, what the overall feeling is about romance books. I think it is improving. But I do think those prejudices still linger.
Really?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like when you tell people I'm a novelist. Oh, what kind of novels? Romance? You feel a little something?
Yeah, it was actually at an event a little while ago, and with other writers, and seeing the faces of some people when I said I wrote romance, just kind of like their eyes kind of. They're trying to take me seriously. But you can see a look in people's faces sometimes shift.
How are you with that?
I don't care.
Good.
I just don't care.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
great.
Yeah. I mean, I come from women's media. I'm used to an outside audience thinking that content that is by and large written by women for by and large women is looked down on. I'm used to that.
Let's talk, before we go, about The Summer Will Be Different, your new book, which I read in my office at the CBC. It's the first time you set a book outside of Ontario, set in Prince Edward Island. It's about Lucy and Bridget, best friends who vacation in PEI every summer. There's flings and friendship and temptation and all that stuff. Inspired by a real trip you took.
Yeah. I went to Prince Edward Island the first time with my best friend when we were in our early 20s. Meredith had been to the island several times before. She has an aunt who lived there. So we stayed with her aunt in Summerside and drove all around the island and only ate seafood. We like made a pledge not to eat any other food but seafood. And what happened, the first thing we did when we got off the plane was we drove into Charlottetown and we went to one of the restaurants on the wharf. We sat at the bar and there was a man shucking oysters mm-hmm. at the bar. And
surprisingly erotic thing to do, I learned from your book. It kind of is. Your arms are working.
And I love an oyster.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I get it. I understand. Okay, so there's someone shucking oysters there.
And so we sit down across from him and he says, "Where are you in from?" And we said, "Toronto." And he looked me in the eye and he said, "I'm so sorry. Welcome home." And it really kind of set the tone for the trip. The people were just so welcoming and funny. The food was just unbelievable. And Meredith and I attended the National Oyster Shucking Championship in Tyne Valley, which plays a big role in the book. And we just had an absolute blast.
It's a romance novel. It's a steamy.
Yeah.
Steamy romance novel.
It's a shut your office door.
Shut your office door. Turn on the white noise. Pull the blinds. Romance. Yeah. It's a romance novel.
Yeah,
it's
maybe keep the book at home. I don't know.
Fair enough. I did walk over to Vanessa's desk and I went, it's lascivious.
It's steamier than my other books. It is.
But I think it's a book about friendship.
It is. Each of my books looks at different relationships between women, and I'd never written really, really closely and intimately about best friends. And so, it's integral to the book for sure.
We've been sort of talking about your internal life with these mm-hmm. books and how you relate to them. Mm-hmm. I'm interested if you have an example of maybe someone read your book or someone, I know authors typically do, someone said something to you about the book and whether that was meaningful to you, something that sticks out in your mind.
Oh, I had so many people reach out to me after Meet Me at the Lake was published because I also at the back of the book wrote my personal story and struggles in postpartum phase. And so many readers reached out to me to say that they had experienced this too, that they hadn't really seen it, you know, reflected anywhere before, or some people who didn't know what they had been going through and this had shed a light or it had helped them talk to somebody about what they were going through. So that's pretty impactful. And the other thing that I really love is when somebody says one of my books either got them to start reading or helped them find their way back to reading. And I call that being a gateway book. And I think that is one of the best things for an author to hear.
I mean, it's such a story of courage to get off that awful phone call. And I hope the people who are on the phone call are listening to this right now.
You know, the thing about it is no one person's – it's not a person's fault, you know?
I hope the anthropomorphized institution is listening to this right now and hearing what you're saying. It's a great story, Carly. Thanks so much for coming on and sharing it with us.
It's been a pleasure.
I was looking for some vengeance there. Carly Fortune was my guest. Her new book is called This Summer Will Be Different, and it's out everywhere tomorrow. That's it for us today. The other conversation we put up today is with the banjo virtuoso, maybe the greatest living five-string banjo player. So therefore, when I was in high school, my high school idol. Really, which is kind of cool. Bela Fleck, who
just recorded a bluegrass version of Rhapsody in Blue. He'll be here to talk about why he took that on. Go check that out. See you soon. Later on.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.